Today is Sunday, December 19th, 2021. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Sandra Mullen, last name spelled M-O-L-L-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. I would like the listeners to know this interview came about just this morning. Yesterday, while on Facebook, I saw a photograph of a quilt. And the quilt was showing an upstream view from the Toroweep Overlook in Grand Canyon National Park. This is a classic upstream view. You're above lava falls and Vulcan's Anvil. And anyone who's a aficionado of Grand Canyon will know that scene. And the quilt just took my breath away. I put it up on Facebook last night. This morning, there's 500 likes and 100 comments. It's just stunning. So I thought I'll reach out to Sandra, who made this quilt, and here we are talking today. Sandra, thank you so much for your willingness to speak with us today. Let me back up a minute. How long have you been quilting?
I started quilting in the late 1980s, doing very traditional patchwork and then hand appliqué. I actually have a very traditional hand appliqué quilt in the National Quilt Museum in Paducah, Kentucky. After that point, that quilt won that purchase award in 2019. When I finished making that quilt, let me say, I went into more art quilting from photographs, and I've been just working in this genre for maybe 4 or 5 years.
So when I think of quilts, I'm sitting on one on the bed here. They can have designs or they can be patchwork, but I don't think about art quilting where you're trying to quilt a photograph or some sort of landscape scene. What are the challenges between a traditional design quilt, whether you know that we might see as just patterns, and actually then making an art quilt?
All right, first let's talk about how they're the same.
Please.
You can't talk about their differences without talking about how they are the same. It can't be a quilt unless it's made out of layers of fabric with a layer of batting in between. So a quilt isn't a quilt until it's quilted. So quilting is a stitch that forms, the layers of the fabric on the top of the quilt, a layer of batting, and a layer of backing. So I am making quilts. They are quilted, and they're, whether it's traditional applique, patchwork, or in my case, a fused layers, on the top with a solid backing. It's still stitched together, in my case, by machine. So that's how all quilts are the same. So now the construction differences, patchwork, you sew patches together, and I've seen wonderful renditions of landscape quilts that are sewn, patches of fabric, essentially, or pieces of fabric sewn together either by hand or machine. Appliqué is when a piece of fabric is applied to the top of another fabric. It can be turned under edge and hand sewn or machine sewn, or it can be raw edge. So what I'm doing is raw edge. That means all of the pieces of fabric that I use are just cut but not turned under. So when I adapt a photograph, I get that enlarged, do my tracing of the basic outline of the shapes, and then I onto a piece of freezer paper. I iron that freezer paper, which has a plastic hooded side, to a base fabric, and then I cut every little line that I drew, basically, or almost every little line, and I take that little piece of paper and I go find a piece of fabric that looks like what I can see in the image. So of course that's the challenge. It's hard to walk into a fabric store and find every shade of, say, rust that I needed for this quilt. So I'm also a hand dyer. So I started with white fabric, I usually purchase something that's a batik grade. In other words, a finely woven fabric with lots of high thread counts, but thin threads, so that they don't fray as much. Either batiks can be traditionally purchased in stores too, but the hand-woven or the hand-dyed batik grade fabric will give me the consistency of the thread count and fineness. And then I manipulate it in the dye bath. Sometimes in order to get the long streaks that I needed, I would paint the dye on and then kind of, you know, gather it into like folds so that I could get more streaky lines. Or sometimes if I needed a crumple book, I would crumple the fabric into like a container with the dye. You know, there's so many different ways you can manipulate the dye
in okay.
the fabric. So I started with white fabric. But I want to talk, I want to go back a step further about how I got the photographs.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
I live in Valley Springs, California, and there was a photographer here by the name of John Slott who made kind of also on Facebook and social media, he kind of made his name as a photographer out here during the Butte Fire, because some of his images were just, like, amazing. This guy was willing to just get out there and take, you know, images of the fire in progress and the planes. And so once I started following him on Facebook, I saw that he was also an amazing landscape photographer. Mm. You know, a lot of images from San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge and Grand Canyon, because he would get in his truck and he drives everywhere, I assume. So he and I met because we lived at that point just 4 or 5 miles apart. So I met with John and talked to John, and I asked him if he would be willing to allow me to adapt some of his images for quilts. And I asked him first for a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge, and I did that quilt, and it just was wow. You know, it turned out really great, and I did sell that one this year. I said, well, let me do another one. He said, do you have any? I'm like, no, not yet. I said, I kind of wanted to do this one of the Grand Canyon.
Hmm.
And he said, so he had an image of the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and I did that. And I just loved it. I loved that quilt. So when I finished that one, at some point this year, he said, hey, I have a picture I want you to do. And so he says, I'm going to send it to you. And it was Toro Weep Overlook. And I looked at him like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can do that.
Wow. Sandra, just a quick question. How do you spell John's last name?
S-L-O-T.
Thank you.
John Slott.
Thank you.
Just sort of very simply, it sounds just like it's spelled.
Yep, the transcribers will be happy. And we'll just clear okay. those spellings when we get to them. So John actually sent you the photo of Toro Weep. And said, what do you think?
And I saw the image, and I loved it. Who wouldn't love it? I mean, I will admit to some artistic license. In other words, where I saw in the part of the canyon that's to the right side of the photo, I would see some images of reds and purples and rust and stuff. And sometimes I made the saturation just a little bit more color saturated.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I wondered if I was on the right track or not. And in all honesty, when I started this image, I wasn't sure I could do it. But I had two choices, either try it or not try it. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to try it. And so it challenged me, and I wound up going back into the dye studio a couple of times, you know, with yards of fabric to try to get that color, you know, that I wanted for those, you know, kind of burnt oranges,
yeah,
and rusts and reds to purples. And then the sky was a challenge, you know, and so, you know, lots of almost pastels to grays to purples to blues in the sky. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time dyeing the fabric first to get the colors I wanted. I did use some commercial batik fabrics that I have on hand, but very little. Most of them are too printed to work. You know, sometimes they work in small bits, but if you have a printed design on the fabric and you're going for realism, which I certainly am, then you don't want, like, say, a flower peeking out at you.
What is the finished size of this quilt?
This one right now is about 36 inches by 48 inches. So it's fairly big, and it's gorgeous. It's up on the wall, on my design wall in my studio right now, and every time I walk in there with the lights on it, and I look at it, and I think, oh, my God, I don't know if I can ever part with this quilt.
Wow.
I love it so much.
You mentioned you draw this out, and then you end up cutting out all these little pieces.
Yes.
For this quilt, how many pieces of paper did you have?
I had no idea. If I counted them, you So I never count. People ask me, how long did it take you? And I can tell you it took me 9 weeks. But I, and that's a relatively short amount of time for that, just the top. It's not even all the way finished yet. I am about to layer it and quilt it. So, you know, I've got more, you know, weeks left to go in it. I would say that the total amount of time, typically a size like this, is 3 months of pretty solid work.
Wow.
And I work in my studio almost every day. Not every day, but pretty darn close to 7 days a week, which sounds a little bit compulsive. But I work only until I'm tired, and as soon as I become fatigued, either mentally fatigued from choosing fabrics, because honestly, I had to, you know, canvas, you know, probably 100 different pieces of fabric in my stash to find all of the little bits that looked like what I was seeing in the image. So I have to keep a mental inventory of fabrics so that I kind of know where I'm going, and sort all my fabrics by color and texture so that I get, you know, to choose them correctly. In the end, you know, when I was finished with the piece, I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Well,
I surprised myself.
You know, no one would, you know, say to Michelangelo, hey, you're working on this too much. And that's what I think about this. I mean, this is just an incredible piece of art. And
yeah.
So working on it too much, I don't know. That doesn't compute.
Well, I think, well, you know, I've had people suggest that possibly I was a workaholic, and I was like, "No, you know, you have to look at, you know, artistic people are, you know, we maybe are hardwired a little different, because for me, if I'm in my studio working, for me it's meditative. Because if you are working on something and your concentration is solely in that thing, it's like anything else. It's like knitting or, you know, gardening or painting or any other thing that, you know, distracts your mind from whatever's going on in your life. And all of us have hardships. I was widowed this year. My husband was a stage 4 cancer patient since 2017 and passed away in March.
Sorry to hear that.
So what I'm saying is, for me, it's a joyful process and almost meditative. So I don't see it as a sacrifice. It's time well spent, let me just say.
Well,
it goes for me mentally as well.
When I look at your quilt, it is joyful.
It is joyful.
So your work is showing up, your mental attitude, your meditative approach, the joy this gives you, is showing up in your quilts.
That's right. I agree. I think that the hand of the maker is present in any artwork. For those who really want to view it, and there isn't anger, it's joy and a celebration of the complete beauty of the Grand Canyon. I knew I wanted to do a Grand Canyon quilt back when my husband and I traveled there with our youngest daughter probably about 12 years ago, and we just went to the South Rim on that visit. But I was astounded with the the Grand Canyon, and I left the Grand Canyon saying, I am going to make a Grand Canyon quilt someday. And so I have made two now.
What's the other one of? You mentioned the North Rim.
Yes, and I'm going to send you a better image of that, and you can share it with your group. I sent you an image from my iPad, and I don't think it's the right one. I think I have to give you the more high-res image, and I'll send that to you.
Okay, thank you.
But it's also another John Slott-derived photograph, and I love that piece, too. But I think that Toro Weep, you know, which is done a couple years after North Rim, is a better quilt. It's more the composition in it with a wonderful photo to start with, you know, and
yeah.
the colors.
Your work on the sky, that just blew me away. It's having been there a number of times, you have captured that place so well. And that is a reflection back to John, of course, the photographer, but it seems like this is a combination of artists, your skills
together
mm-hmm. just has
yes.
done something really magical there.
I agree. I will tell you that I think that people have compared it to paintings in many of the responses I've gotten through social media. They said, oh, I thought that was a painting at first. And then when they realize it's a quilt, they're more surprised by that because they don't, number one, a lot of people don't know that quilts can be art quilts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not exposed to that genre of quilting. But also, a lot of them just can't fathom the idea of basically what is a collage of fabrics to make a more realistic image.
Yes. And that's what struck me as well. The quilts we have are nothing like this. It does look like a painting, but it's painting with fabric, which is really
yes.
lovely.
Yes. I think that people have said that the reason why quilting is popular, and there are one out of every five households in the United States has a quilter, which is a pretty big percentage
wow,
of people.
Wow, that's lovely.
In the country, you don't realize. And there's a lot of big quilt shows across the country and around the world. And I think that the one thing that draws people into it is the tactile nature of fabric is something that feels more approachable than maybe paint for some people.
Mm.
And it certainly was for me. And there's such a variety of things that you can do, whether you do simple patchwork or applique or whole cloth. But I do want to express that I did not, there are people out there that can take a photograph and then send it off to a company that will just print that image on one piece of fabric. That is not what I did. And
right.
I think that that those quilts are cool in a sense. But they're not, for me, they don't have the artistic, they're just a simple rendition of the photo. They're not the artistic interpretation of that photo, which I think that I do.
And
I think that's the difference.
That's what adds a charm to your quilt. Yeah,
right.
I can see, well, the color isn't quite right, or it doesn't look quite like this or that. But what it is... how can I express this? It captures what Grand Canyon is. Changes it in an artistic manner to make a stunning quilt.
Right.
It's definitely not a photo on a piece of cloth.
That just
makes it hard for me to comprehend. My brain is like, why heavens? How did you do that?
Yeah,
absolutely
yeah, yeah.
beautiful. So are you thinking about doing another quilt on Grand Canyon?
I believe it or not, I've had so many people either offer me images or, contacted me with images of their own, of that area, including one that was taken from a skydiver, which I thought was the funniest one of all,
wow.
really. I definitely will go back and revisit the Grand Canyon again, because I'm just drawn to that image. But I want to also, I have some other obligations to do for a couple of other commission pieces that I have to do. And then I'll be back probably. And I want to do Yosemite, a couple of good Yosemite National Park pieces too. I actually live close to Yosemite.
Okay.
But I'd like to, visit Sedona and do some images from there as well. And of course, the Grand Canyon could be done ad nauseum. You could never get tired of it.
That's right. That's right.
The colors, that in the sky, and I even, if you look at the Torrelweep image and you see that the light, the angle of the light is catching the rocks on the one face and reflecting off of parts of the river to give it almost, I use some yellows and other tones in there,
mm-hmm.
to show that reflection. And I also used hand-dyed fabrics, which gave some movement to the water, so that it doesn't look like it's completely flat,
yes.
but reflecting in some areas. I put a lot of thought and time into that piece, and I feel like at some point I'd like to have it, in a collection that showcases art from, the Grand Canyon area, or a museum out there. I would be more likely to want to sell it at some point down the road to to a place where it would have a public exhibition versus a private exhibition.
That'd be lovely.
Would be my choice.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd like to continue to share my work with the world. And I think that, inspire others, to a creative course,
mm-hmm.
In their
mm-hmm.
life. I think that creative people are mentally happier and healthier people, mentally healthier and mentally happier people, because creativity, it just feeds your soul, and then it gives back to the world as well.
That's lovely, and I sort of think, the world is your canvas,
right.
when you're an artist that can create images to the level that you can, I'm just thrilled, and I'm like, oh, what are you going to do next? This is just really
I'll
beautiful.
I'll come out to Flagstaff and visit you guys out there for sure.
That would be
in fact,
lovely.
I'm driving through there the day after Christmas.
Okay,
not this year, but at some point I will definitely come out, and I'm going to visit Sedona and the Grand Canyon myself again and take some photographs, and I'll continue to work, in this genre for whatever years I have left.
Hmm.
It's been an amazing journey from the first quilt that I ever made to today, and I'm incredibly grateful for, the opportunities I had to create, and I feel very, very, very lucky.
Well, we as a species are very. Honored by you and your work. It's clearly everyone who's seen this has just been stopped in their tracks, and so I really thank you.
Thank you so much for telling me. This the response I got through social media was beyond gratifying and exciting. I was glad that other people thought that this piece was beautiful. I certainly did. When I was working on it and when I finished it, I was like, I think this is a gorgeous piece.
It is. It absolutely is. As they say, may you live long and prosper.
Thank you. Well, I certainly appreciate your well wishes, because I would like to continue for, many more years making art quilts and leave that legacy for my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that, none of us have know how long we have on this earth, but one thing I can tell you for people who create and do something with their hands is you do leave a part of yourself behind for others, your descendants to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they will know you by the work of your hands or your art.
That's
or,
right.
You know, what you cared about.
Yeah.
That's a legacy. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's truly lovely. Sandra, is there anything else I haven't asked you that you think I should have and that you would like to say?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my personal history.
Please.
I grew up on a small farm in Michigan on Lake Huron. So, you know, I was always tromping around the fields and walking down on the beach, and my heart is still there, even if I physically don't live in Michigan anymore. I live in California, as I said earlier. I do have a college degree, but my major in college was biology. I wound up using that by working in, you know, research labs for a while, but that wasn't something that fired up my soul. I realized I majored in biology simply because I just loved life. I loved the study of life and growing things, but I really didn't love research. And so I started teaching. I substitute taught science in California for science and other, you know, topics for 14 or 15 years out here, and then encouraged by my husband to stop doing two jobs, because I was teaching quilting at the same time I was teaching students in public school. He's like, pick one job or the other, because you're never home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, then it has to be quilting. If I had to pick one or the other, I'm doing that.
Sandra,
and he's fine.
When you were growing up in Michigan on the farm, did anyone in your family quilt?
My mother did a little bit of cross stitch on a quilt and hand quilted it. And she says that descendants on her side of the family were Pennsylvania Dutch,
mm-hmm.
Through Pennsylvania, and did make quilts, but I didn't have any of those or see any of them. So I do have ancestors who quilted in the Pennsylvania Dutch part of the country, and that might be why I immediately, the first time I saw a quilting magazine in around 1987, I'm like, oh, okay, I have to make a quilt. And I just told my husband, I have to make a quilt. And he's like, okay. That's the one thing about my husband that I can say is that without his support all these years, I could not have done it.
Nice. So it wasn't it wasn't like growing up as a teenager you were into quilting.
No.
Came to you a little later in life.
Yeah, well, you know, really, actually, in my late 20s, you know.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't really that old, almost 30 maybe. Late 20s is when I made my first quilt, and I simply never stopped.
Nice.
I just kept going. And, you know, I got better sewing machines over time and more fabric and more thread, you know, as you collect stuff. And I was interested in other things. You know, I've done, you know, other types of arts and crafts. But, you know, quilting was my thing. And, you know, even my kids growing up with it, they knew that Mom was a quilter.
Mm.
You know, and I had my third child, and at 6 weeks, I handed her to my husband when he got home from work, and I'm like, I'm off to my quilt meeting. I will see you in a few hours. here's the baby. Here's the bottle. I'm off, you know, because this is something I had to do. But like I said, I had the support of my family.
Mm.
I would not have been able to do it without that.
Nice. I'm going to go back for a minute because it suddenly occurred to me. Do you use a machine? It seems like sometimes there's a machine that will... you know, you've got to sew the pieces down.
Yes, you do.
So you have to turn it through your sewing machine to bunch it all up and then get in there to the small area you're working on?
No, it's not that hard. So I do hand guide all the stitches, and I don't pre-mark them per se, except with the lines and stuff that I will add, usually with, like, Fabrico markers. I'll put in a little bit of line work here and there.
Okay.
And then I go in and I follow those lines with threads, and I choose my thread color to match or to accentuate. So if I want something to go a little bit darker, I could use a black thread, for instance, you know. The machine I have is called it's like a mid-arm quilting machine, and it's on a table, so I don't roll my quilt into a roller. It's like a long-arm quilting machine. But I do move the quilt around. I will fold it in half a little bit from the back, but I have about a 20-inch throat space, so it's not wadded up.
Okay.
It would be very hard to wad something up of that size that I'm working on. So I have a really great machine and then I hand guide. I have a bobbin thread and a top thread, just like any sewing machine,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, guide the stitches where I want them. The stitching does two things. One, it keeps structural integrity between the pieces that are fused so
right.
that they can't come off.
Right.
It holds the whole thing together. The fusing is very lightweight, and it would not be permanent. It'll hold for some time.
Mm.
But you could peel it back. I could go in and peel off any one of those pieces right now.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I could hit if they, but sometimes they come loose, and I have to hit them down with a hot iron. And you can only do that so many times before it stops sticking. So I try to, you know, not move the quilt around a whole lot, you know, until I get the stitching done. And, of course, like any quilt on a machine, you start in the middle of the piece and you work your way out towards the edges. Then you can block it to get it flat if you need to, and then sewing facing strips and a sleeve so that you can hang it.
Right.
Or I sometimes will mount it on stretcher bars if I want a piece to be for permanent exhibition that maintains, you know, a structural wooden frame underneath. But I'm careful not to let any of the wood touch the fabric so that it of the quilt itself, so that it remains a space or something in between it, so that it's acid free, so that no wood touches the cloth.
Nice.
For the period of, you know, so that it's preserving the work.
Right, and a 20-inch throat. I'm thinking that where the needle is, it's almost 2 feet away to where the rest
That's
of
right.
the machine is. So
where the arm is. Yes.
So a 48-inch quilt, you almost get to the middle of the quilt. Not quite, but
almost.
We're close.
Yeah. And so, you know, I will fold it in half maybe sometimes
okay.
when I'm working in, towards one edge. But that's about as much as I do. And then I've got both hands on the surface of the quilt moving it around, and my eyes are, like, right there. I change the needle every 6 hours, pretty much, of work, so that I have a very sharp needle and a very clean machine.
Wow.
I don't want skip stitches or flaws, so I try to make sure that the stitches are all the same length, that the thread color is one that complements the fabric. It's a lot of thought and time that goes into that.
I bet.
Part of it as well.
You mentioned you're an award-winning quilter, and that some of your quilts are in the National Quilt Museum. How many?
I have eight quilts. Yes, in the National Quilt Museum.
That's just amazing. How many quilts have you made by now, roughly? Do you have any idea?
Oh, golly. I don't really know. I would say somewhere between 50 and 100, but I couldn't give you an exact number.
Okay.
I'd have to count them, really. And I've given away and sold pieces throughout my lifetime.
Hmm.
So I've donated quilts, of course, to charitable causes. And I have given quilts to, you know, family members and friends, and made baby quilts and grandkids quilts and bed quilts and wall quilts and seasonal quilts and, you know,
wow.
Hard to say. But I will tell you that the art quilting I'm doing right now, I am limited to about 3 pieces per year or 4 potentially that I can produce of this quality because, it takes me 3 months to do a piece this way on average
right.
of this size.
Yeah, it's just That limits it right there. Wow. Well, you do incredible work. It's been a real honor to speak with you about this. And anything else you want to add?
No, I think that does it. And I really am honored that you chose to interview me, and I hope that it increases interest in the textile arts, which I'd like to continue to see grow throughout the United States and the world.
Nice. That's very nice. Well, it's an honor speaking with you. This has just been really wonderful. And with that, I think we'll conclude this Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Sandra Malone. My name is Tom Martin. It's Sunday, December 19th, 2021. And Sandra, thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.